Welcome, my friends, to Jack's backyard, where we'll spend this hour with the trees and birds and flowers. It's a bluebird day here in Jack's backyard. So come on in and chat with us a while.
It's time for Jack's Backyard on the Voice of Berks County, 830 AM, WEEU. The views expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the staff, management, ownership, or sponsors of 830 AM, WEEU. And now, here's the host of Jack's Backyard, Jack Holcomb.
Well, thank you very much, and good morning, everyone. Welcome to another Spring Saturday here in the backyard on 830 WEEU, the voice of Berks and beyond. Jack Holcomb here, along with young and very capable producer, Linda, ready to stroll in nature's bounty for the next 2 hours. As always, I hope you enjoyed a healthy and a successful week with some smiles. Did you enjoy the eclipse? Did you enjoy the Reading Phillies? The Fightin' Phils are back for another season. Thank you for all of the emails and letters, lots of new birds seen. Let's see, what do we have? We had palm warblers, water thrush, oven bird, cat birds, brown thrashers, loons, and Bonaparte's gulls on Blue Marsh Lake. We had a house wren, too. One house wren reported. And as you might expect, a few bald eagles, too. Some wonderful photos, and I thank you for those as well. The email address is jkhbird@aol.com. The postal address is Jack's Backyard, WEEU, 34 North 4th Street, Reading, Pennsylvania, 19601. Those are telephone numbers to connect with us, and I hope you do. 610-374-8800, toll free 888-401-0459. Bill Urich and Mike Slater will be here too today, so come in and share your birds, bears, and bees with us right here on this 13th day of April. And by the way, don't you dare forget our podcasts, which are now up and running, in addition to the rebroadcast of The Backyard on Sunday mornings from 8 to 10. Tomorrow you'll hear last week's show, and next week you'll hear this radio program. And be sure you... I've been neglectful, I suppose, and not mentioning our fantastic website. Check that out, 830weeu.com. Okay? All righty. Well, let's see. Hope you are smiling this morning with the rain, but it's going to clear up. We're going to have a nice day as we just be patient, and the sun will shine. Current events on the calendar. Let's start by going to Monocacy Hill. They have a walk in the woods tomorrow at 1:30 p.m. Monocacy Hill. All walks start from the Geiger Road parking lot and are free and open to the public. All children younger than 18 years of age must be accompanied by an adult. So it's going to be a nice day tomorrow for a walk at Monocacy Hill. On Wednesday, April 17th at 6 o'clock, the Carbon County Environmental Education Center, Summit Hill, Pennsylvania, invites everyone for a free program on ticks, the types found in our area, and the disease threats different species might pose to people and their pets. Tick Talk will be presented by Dr. Nicole Ciccini, director of the East Stroudsburg University's program, Dr. Jane Huffman, Wildlife Genetics Institute, and the institute houses a tick diagnostic lab capable of testing for 17 different tick-borne pathogens. So that will be at the Summit Hill headquarters for the Carbon County Environmental Education Center, Wednesday, 6 p.m. Go and learn more from the experts about ticks. Hawk Mountain Sanctuary has homeschool happening ethology, and that will be Wednesday, April 17th, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, $20 for adult and one child, $35 for members, $10 for additional child. You can join Hawk Mountain to learn about why animals behave the way they do and how we study their behavioral patterns. Registration is required for that. And remember to register for all the programs at Hawk Mountain. Just go to hawkmountain.org. On Friday, April 19th, their youth art exhibit will begin the 19th of April and continue through May 31st. Winners from the Youth Art Month contest will be on display at the Visitor Center, and that is absolutely free of charge. On Friday, April 19th, the Appalachian Geology Legacy of Hawk Mountain's Landscape. That will be Friday and Saturday, April 19th and April 20th, and Friday from 3 to 5, Saturday 8:30 a.m. to 4 p.m., $150, $125 for members and students. Taught by Dr. Craig Cockle, retired geology professor from Bucknell University. It's a two-day workshop, and you'll use the trails, views, and highway road cuts along Hawk Mountain to follow more about the geology of that area. So forget, you must register for that program and can do so by going to hawkmountain.org. Next Saturday at the mountain, let's try to count all the birds in Pennsylvania. Saturday, April 20th, 8 to 10 a.m., $15, $10 for members. You can join Pennsylvania Bird Atlas Coordinator Amber Weewell on a birding walk around the Visitor Center and Nature Habitat Garden to practice bird identification, which is very important for the Atlas, which will be out, won't be out this year probably, but all the research will take place this year. So there you have it, the happenings at Hawk Mountain Sanctuary. Well, let's see. Lancaster County Bird Club has a walk scheduled on Monday, April 15th. The venue is Schenck's Ferry in Conestoga. 7 a.m. start for Wildflower-Centered Bird Walk. And you must again pre-register for the programs by 6 o'clock the night before. And you can do so by going to LancasterBirdClub.org. All one word, LancasterBirdClub.org. That will be on the 15th. Saturday, April 20th, the venue is Safe Harbor and Chestnut Grove Natural Area at 8 a.m. The focus will be on the different habitats and hotspots with these areas. Some target birds include yellow-throated warbler, palm warbler, white-eyed vireo, and fox sparrows. And again, you must register for that program the night before and check it out at LancasterBirdClub.org. Well, let's see. Berks Nature has a complete list of programs for you. They have a Girl Scout program, Echo Friend Bee, for Brownie, Tuesday, April 16th, 6 to 8 p.m., $10 per scout. The Brownie Echo Friend badge is the Girl Scouts program designed to help girls learn a little bit more about the environment. So that's Tuesday, April 16th, 6 to 8. April 16th, same day, Story Walk Stroll, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. That one is free. The Story Walk is a fun new way to enjoy your property at Angelica Creek Park, and the favorite children's books learn about them as well. On Thursday, April 18th, a family bike hike from 4 to 6 p.m., $5 per person, during the special program, Hit the Trails with Nature. We'll take a bike ride along the Schuylkill River Trail and learn all about the trail etiquette and the exceptional trail network that interfaces Burke's mosaics of natural and urban environments. Also on the 19th, Global Elementary Education Trail. Friday, April 19th from 5 to 8 p.m., $15 per person. Join the Globe International community at this special training for anyone interested in basic science. So that will be April 19th from 5 to 8 p.m. Also on the 19th, Quarterly Reset, Guided Mediation Forest Bathing. We talked about that some time ago, forest bathing. April 19th, 6 to 8 p.m. at the Nature Place, $5 per person. Come join us for a mindfulness meditation bathing experience. And that will be with a fireside chat. Learn more about forest bathing. That's healing, to say the least. Middle Creek Wildlife Management Area, next Saturday, April 20th, 10 a.m., and monitoring avian productivity and survivorship. An up-close look at bird banding research, and that will be held at 10 o'clock. Meet at the headquarters at Middle Creek Wildlife Management Area in Kleinfeldersville, just a little bit, was that, east of Kleinfeldersville? Anyway, that's the place to be to learn. Well, next Saturday, a big day, the annual Earth Day. Berks County will be held Saturday, April 20th at City Park Banshell from noon to 6 p.m. Rain or shine, you can dress for the weather. Free event and on-street parking. Activities for kids, food trucks, live music all day. Lots of vendors and organizations which represent good health for our earth and our community. The amazing event has been held in Berks since 1989. And all of the places that we've mentioned, basically with all of the current events, will be there too for with exhibits and so forth. Red Creek Wildlife Center will be there. Hawk Mountain will be there. Berks Nature will be there as well, plus many others. So check it out next Saturday, noon to 6 p.m. at City Park. Schuylkill County Conservancy, dedication of Frog Hollow Nature Center, next Saturday, 8:30 a.m. to 9:30 a.m. And the location is 170 Stone Mountain Road, Schuylkill Haven. That's the Frog Hollow Nature's, the Schuylkill Haven Frog Hollow Nature Area, Stone Mountain Road in Pine Grove, Pennsylvania. The dedication of Frog Hollow Nature Area will occur at Homestead area just off the Wildflower Trail. And the Schuylkill County Conservancy, county and community officials will dedicate Frog Hollow Nature Area on the second Schuylkill County-owned park. So that will be next Saturday, 8:30 a.m. to 9:30 a.m. And also they'll have the Earth Day Trail cleanup at Frog Hollow from 9 until noon. At Mountain Road, Stone Mountain Road, Schuylkill Haven, Pennsylvania. Looking ahead, there will be a Family Nature Fest, a free family event presented by the Union Township, Robinson Township Environmental Advisory Committee, Saturday, April 27th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Union Meadows East. That's at 100 Campbell Forge Road, Douglasville, Pennsylvania. It's right behind Fork and Ale. There'll be live animal demonstrations, crafts, free food, and drink for all. And a lot of the places that we have mentioned again, Berks Nature will be there, Berks Pennsylvania Game Commission, Hawk Mountain Sanctuary, the Hampton Stables, Penn State Master Gardeners, Burke's Nature, as mentioned, all kinds of people there that know all about our natural world. Also looking ahead, the Baird Ornithological Club is having their annual banquet in conjunction with the Mengel Natural History Society on May 10th at the Peanut Bar, 332 Penn Street in Reading. And the program will be George L. Armistead's program, founder and guide of Hillstar Nature, presenting a program, Ornithology, the Birds and the Bees and Birds and the Bees. An interesting program indeed. The cost is $40 per person with a reservation deadline of Thursday, April 18th. So that's coming up. So that's this coming week. And one may submit payment online. To find out more information, you can contact Charles Coleman at 610-763-2548. That's Charles Coleman at 610-763-2548 for reservations and more information. By the way, I want to mention, too, the annual Wild Goose Chase. The run, walk at Middle Creek Wildlife Management Area will be held on August 31st this year at 8 a.m. in the morning. The race is on a closed road inside of the area at 9 a.m., and you can get more information by simply going to jogger7@ptd.net. jogger7@ptd.net. Or you can go to pretzelcitysports.com, pretzelcitysports.com/calendar for more information on that wild goose chase at Middle Creek in August. And that will do it for our current events. That's all the information I have. Remember, if your organization is sponsoring any kind of nature happening, we'll be more than happy to publicize it for you absolutely free of charge, but I'd like the information. Best way to get it to me is through my email, jkhbird@aol.com, jkhbird@aol.com. The postal address, in case you don't have a computer, just put the information on a postcard, put it in a letter, and send it to Jack's Backyard, WEEU, 34 North 4th Street, Reading, Pennsylvania, 19601. If you do that, I greatly appreciate it, and I'd like the information 1 week, 2 weeks in advance would be ideal. And I think 99% of you do that, and I am grateful for that. Okay. 610-374-8800 out of the area. Toll-free 888-401-0459. And I certainly would love to talk with you on this rainy Saturday morning, but the sun is going to shine, and we'll have that complete weather for you in just a bit. I noticed this week a sad note. One of the eagles at Codorus State Park killed one of its eaglets this week. Travis Lau, a spokesman for the Pennsylvania Game Commission, said officials are not sure why it happened and are trying to get some answers. One of the eggs developed a pip and was immediately killed, he said. The Game Commission isn't sure if the other egg in the nest is viable or not. The bird eagle sits on the first egg of the season in its nest. He sent a picture as well. And we do know the eagles have a large following on social media, and the loss of the young eaglet is upsetting some. So perhaps we'll hear more from the Pennsylvania Game Commission on the death of that one eaglet, if you will. And time to say good morning to Matthew. How are you this morning, young man?
Oh, really glad to be talking to you, as always, Jack.
Thank you, Matt. What's up?
Well, zero antlers on deer anymore. They're totally shed, as you know, probably.
Yes.
And I'm really looking forward to seeing my first brown thrasher. Do you think it'll be soon?
Oh, yeah. I've had reports of brown thrashers already, Matt.
Wow. Oh, great. They're just a wonderful bird. And now I have a few little quiz questions, no jokes. I know you're not too thrilled with jokes, but just let me what bird makes a direct line, or what woodpecker makes a line, a straight line of holes in the tree? Do you have any idea?
Yellow-bellied sapsucker.
Wow. Boy, you are such a pro. I'm totally impressed. And, all right, what fish is the Pennsylvania state fish?
I really don't know that. Is it a trout?
Yes, correct. Brook trout, actually. What amphibian is the state amphibian? I bet you don't get this.
Hellbender.
Wow. I should quit while I'm ahead or behind, whatever. So, all right. It was delightful talking to you, Jack. How many years has it been that you've been doing this show?
Since 2001.
Wow. You know, this is technical, but when this song, we spend this hour with the trees ember. Oh, it's actually, we spend this 2 hours. Anybody ever tell you that?
Oh, yeah. That when Dave recorded that, that was when the show was only an hour.
Oh, okay. All right. Talk to you next week, Jack.
I hope so, Matt. Have a good one.
10-4.
Bye-bye. This is The Backyard. 610-374-8800. Out of the area, toll-free 888-401-0459. Mary sent this along, and I thank her for this. For a moment, I'm quoting now, for a moment, things weren't looking great for the newest California condor chick. But thanks to some quick thinking and CT scanning technology, the San Diego Zoo welcomed its 250th hatchling in conservationists' ongoing species recovery program. To celebrate, the wildlife park has released images and the video of the moments leading up to the arrival of Emi, which is, that's the name of the new condor, including a fascinating look within the egg itself. So that's great. That's at the San Diego Zoo. I can't believe that. I remember when they started the program at the San Diego Zoo. I believe there was another place that happened as well. And I had the opportunity at the time to meet some of the people involved with that. And 250th condor. That is great. That is absolutely great. It is that time of day, ladies and gentlemen, to say good morning to our friend, Bill Urich. Bill, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Doing well. Enjoying this April weather. I mean, yesterday was a perfect April day.
Yes.
Wind, clouds, showers, now sunny, now some rain, now sunny again. And the light was really great coming through. It was springtime. It was April. It felt good.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. Well, that's a great story about the condors. And also, I believe Hawk Mountain had some role early on in some of the condor.
Yes, that's correct.
Restoration and conservation efforts out in California. So, yeah, that's the California condor is really another one of those hopefully success stories. But you know, obviously the bird is still pretty much on the brink. So it's good when we have these little successes, and they keep adding up over the years.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed.
Yes. Yeah, so how was your eclipse day?
I was inside. I didn't look for the eclipse. I have eye issues, so I don't do those things.
Oh, okay. Well, it was certainly interesting because we were over at the museum, and throughout the whole eclipse experience, it reminded me of those 1950s science fiction movies because everybody was just standing around looking up at the sky, you know. So you have hundreds of people just standing, like, in an area looking up at the sky. And it reminded me of those, you know, flying saucer movies of the 50s or something. And I thought, no, yeah, that's pretty cool. And the way the light just sort of, you know, the cloud cover was really a shame. But there were, you know, spots that we could see the sun and the moon doing its thing up there. But when it reached its peak, it was kind of an interesting light, sort of a different kind of light-dark thing. So it was definitely something to experience. It was a lot of fun, and it was actually more fun watching the people than it was watching the eclipse, because it's just something you don't see. People just so enraptured with that act of nature like that.
Was it clear here, Bill?
There's high clouds that it would pop through and then disappear and pop through the clouds, but I think people did get to see a good eclipse experience here, despite some of the cloudiness. But so I still don't have my Louisiana water thrush, and I've been walking up along the Rose Creek in the last couple of days, though, because of the rain and bad weather, I didn't get up there. So, you know, probably tomorrow morning I'll go out and hopefully find it, I hope. But I was doing, last week we were talking about the water thrushes, and I was doing a little more reading in a certain bird book about Berks County here. That it's always kind of fun to go reading the individual species account and seeing what's happening. And you know, last week I was sort of lamenting about identification between the northern Louisiana water thrushes, mm-hmm. and it just became very obvious to me that, oh, well, you know, of course, the Louisiana water thrushes show up in their territory. So if we're, you know, on a wooded, fast-flowing stream and we have a water thrush, it's got to be a Louisiana water thrush because that's its breeding territory, even before it starts singing. But if I'm, like, at Lake Onewanee, I might, you know, and I see a water thrush, well, I think, well, it has to be a northern, because if a Louisiana wouldn't be in that kind of habitat. So that's one of those birds I think we can identify almost by its habitat, or at mm-hmm. least put us in that direction. And I just wanted to point out, when I was reading in A Century of Bird Life, so these different accounts, it just reminded me again, you know, we talked about Jack's backyard, but Anna Kendall's backyard.
Yes,
that was
yes.
an amazing, amazing bit of work that she had there. That, for instance, you know, just in illustrating the whole Louisiana water thrush thing about not appearing on migration, she had 15 times more Connecticut warbler sightings than she did Louisiana water thrush sightings in migration. What she had was, she had an outbuilding,
yes.
and a bucket over a drip water mm-hmm. Feature, and she would sit there and just let the birds come to her. It was like the essence of wonderful backyard bird watching. And she got the greatest birds, the greatest warbler sightings. She had, when we were talking about Connecticut warblers here, which is a very, very rare fall migrant here, occasionally extremely rare in the spring, but she had over, you know, as of 1997, she had over 44 Connecticut warbler records, which is really astounding. I don't know anybody who has 44 Connecticut warbler sightings.
Yes.
And she was just a wonderful, wonderful work and record keeping with her backyard little water feature, and just a nice little bird blind that she had, and she just sat there and just let the birds come to her, and they did, and she recorded them and gave us some really great bird records over her lifetime.
I learned a lot there, Bill. I learned a lot there.
Yeah, I visited there a couple times, and it was just very peaceful, you know, because you were sitting a little bit like in the dark end of the building, just out watching out, and it wasn't really, it was, you know, outside of Leesport, but it wasn't anything that was you know, that you would think would be like a migrant trap or anything like that. You know, it was just the ebb and flow of migration over one spot and one, you know, rather, it was still fields and woodsy and things like that. But it could have been any place, you know, in Berks County. And it was just a matter that she had the right plantings, the right water, just water, and just the patience to look out and watch those birds.
Yeah, do we see that anymore? By seeing it, or do we hear about it? Anybody with that kind of habitat attraction?
Yeah, I haven't really heard. Of course, Joan has that great backyard bird feeding station at her former place in Burn Township.
Right.
That she had incredible records. You know, Harold Lebo had that great new feeding station. But what she did was just a simple bucket with a hole in it and a drip.
That's right.
You know? And
that's
it
right.
Attracted those birds. And, I think that it's a rare birder today who can just sit in one spot and stay there. You know, the hawk watchers do it, you know, but the regular bird watchers, you know, if we're out, we want to be walking around and get to as many places and get as many points, you know, sight points on our eBird walking thing. And so I don't know if many people have the patience anymore to just sit and let the birds come to them, especially during migration.
Right. Well, we wish you a good week. We hope there are a lot of good birds coming by your binoculars.
I hope so, too. You have a good one, too.
Thanks, Bill. Bye-bye. This is The Backyard right here on News Talk 830 WEEU. The voice of Berks and beyond. And let's see where we are here. Let's go to Terry. This is Terry, I believe. Good morning.
Hi, Bill. Jack.
Yes.
Anyhow, what's the entomologist's name that calls in once in a blue moon?
That's
the bug lady.
Becca Robertson.
Becca.
Becca. Short for Rebecca.
Thinking about her, she calls in every once in a while, and then you have people that want to call in and ask her a question, right?
That's right.
And didn't she just put out a book?
That I'm not sure of. I don't believe so, because she's still doing graduate work.
Oh. Okay. Anyhow, thinking about her, and that people call in to ask her questions. Now, switch over to Mike Slater. I was thinking maybe once a month or something, let people call in and ask him questions.
Well, it's something, I don't know if it'll be once a month, but we're thinking about that, okay?
All right. And I was going to ask him questions about the quality of the water of Blue Marsh with that green algae stuff. Has that cleared up, or?
That I don't know. I have no idea. I haven't heard of that, Terry.
Oh, yeah, that was going on for a while. They had it in the paper. But that would be one thing. But I think that would be a great idea to let people call in and ask him questions.
Well, we have to get him in here to do that, so we'll see how it goes, okay?
Okay. All right, good morning.
Glad you called.
All right, bye-bye.
Take care, bye-bye. This is The Backyard, and we're glad you're along today. And we're glad that Cynthia is here, too. Cynthia, good morning. How are you?
I'm great, Jack. How are you?
Well, last time I checked, everything was all right.
Well, that's good. You're on this side of the grass, and you're talking on the phone.
That's correct.
Yeah, I'm sorry you didn't get to see the eclipse. My daughter and I saw it from our front yard, and it was just really neat to experience it, just the two of us. And someday I want to travel to the total eclipse and just experience it by myself with nature and see what it's like. It's on my bucket list, but I better hurry because the list is long and time is getting a little short. Anyway, what I called about was bluebird houses.
Yeah.
We have a bluebird house up, and it appears that we have a chickadee tenant, because I'm noticing that there are increasing amounts of moss in the bottom of the box,
yes.
Which is fine. I love chickadees. But I want to build another one. I have a pole, and I have a squirrel and predator guard for the pole, and I have a kit from the Bluebird Society. But what I need to know, I want to put the escape hole in it. But I need to know what side of the bluebird box is the best. Do I need to put a guard around the hole, you know, like the piece of wood covered with metal so animals don't chew it? And what size should the escape hole be?
Same size as the entrance hole.
Okay.
And it doesn't matter. I don't believe it matters which side of the house it's on.
Okay. So it doesn't matter if you put it on the side or the back or anything like that.
I think side is preferred.
Okay. All right. I can do that. Because I want to get a spade bit for my drill and put that on before I make the house. And is it best to put the protection around the hole, you know, the piece of wood and sheet metal covering it so that things don't chew the hole open?
I don't know about the escape hole, certainly the entrance hole. I'm not sure. I don't know if Nancy, who suggested it, of course, the bluebird lady, who suggested that, I don't know if she has that little fixture on the predator guard is what it is. On this side hole or not.
Okay, yeah. I couldn't find any information, oddly enough, with the information I got from the Bluebird Society when I joined. And I can't find the information on the kit either. So I'm glad to have this information so I can get the box up. I know it's late, but maybe I can catch a second brood.
Yeah. I'm not sure, and I'm trying to remember. It seems I don't believe the Bluebird Society mentions the side hole. Did you notice that in the literature that you received?
When I joined at the farm show, and they were talking about the bluebird houses and things. And when I talked, they didn't say anything, but I talked to the one guy afterward, the president, I guess, and he endorsed having an escape hole.
Okay.
But yet they didn't say anything during the main talk, so I don't know.
Yeah, I think it is a relatively new that happening, and how successful it is. Apparently Nancy finds it very successful. Whether anybody else has tried it, if they have and can let us know, we'd really appreciate it.
Well, it makes sense. So maybe I'll try it and I'll see what happens and see if the chickadees can coexist. And if I get lucky, bluebirds will come too.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Good luck, Cynthia.
Thanks. Well, thank you for the information, Jack.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Stay well.
You too.
Bye-bye. This is Jack's Backyard. Saturday mornings right here on WEEU, the voice of Berks and beyond. Good to have you along. Let's move merrily along here. Let's say, let's see. Pat, is this you? Good morning.
Yes, Jack, it's me.
Good to have you aboard.
Nice to be here. I listen to you all the time.
Thank you.
Pass some information about you along to others. I hope they haven't offended anyone.
I appreciate that.
You look like she's a nice lady, so should be okay. What I wanted to ask you very simply was the fledgling period for a house sparrow, and that means by fledgling period I mean born till death, all by natural causes, I guess.
Yeah, it's hard to say with songbirds. You can't predict a lifespan really. Some people say 5 to 7 years in that range. Something like that. It's very hard to pinpoint.
Would a bluebird's fledgling life be any different from the what you just mentioned before?
Probably not within that same general range, right. Depending on predation. That's very important. Food supply, everything, you know, probably they could live a little longer if there were no predators,
right.
And plenty of food, et cetera.
Well, that gets me going. I guess worms, little mealyworms are still the best things for bluebirds?
Absolutely. Either the live ones or the dry ones.
Okay. Because I haven't had a whole lot of luck getting ones that I can get to the window in time to see. So I might just switch over to the worms and see how that goes.
Yeah. But I do hope you get them, and they're great birds to have around.
Okay. Will do. As always, you do a great job.
I'm glad you called that. Thank you. Well, I try.
There you go.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Right. Bye-bye.
This is The Backyard. Yeah, trying is, I guess that's the best word. Something like that, anyway. And let's go right back to the phones, and we'll say good morning to Avery, who is up next. Avery, good morning. How are you today?
Fine, Jack. Hearing your voice just warms up the weather. And I have a question for you. A fellow had called in about the condors. Now, this question might sound kind of offbeat, but is there a seasonal thing why they're out in the East Coast and they're not in the West Coast and they're not in the East Coast? Is that a seasonal thing for them?
No, they're permanently Western birds.
Oh, okay. What is their wingspan?
Pretty close to, what is it, about 10 feet.
Is that one wing?
That's total wings.
Oh, okay. Well, I heard the fellow call in, and I thought, if anybody knew, you would know, and now I know, and I thank you very much. And again, keep the old heart pumping, and it's always so good to hear you, and God bless.
You're very That's sweet. Thank you, Avery. You stay well, my dear.
Thank you, dear.
Bye-bye. This is The Backyard. I was just thinking, talking about condors, Jim Brett, when he was curator at Hawk Mountain, and also a good friend, Tom Leckie, they did a lot of work with the condors, and I can't remember the scientist's name that was also involved who spent time at Hawk Mountain. But anyway, the name escapes me at the moment. Anyway, this is The Backyard, and I'm I'm glad you're along today and putting up with me. All right, let's go back to the phones, and let's say good morning to Nancy up there in Shoey. Nancy, glad you called today with the bluebird help.
Yeah, well, good morning to you, too. Yes, I would put the hole away from the prevailing winds on the side. I do have the extension on. You can actually get a flat washer that you can put on the inside, glue it or whatever, with a big hole. I think they come like an inch and a half so that the woodpeckers and that can't destroy the inside of the hole.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
So you can do that to protect the birds from pecking the hole to death. What was the other question? She wanted to know, I would stay away from the prevailing winds on the side.
Okay.
I forgot what to ask the question. You can give her my phone number, 610-562-2850, and I can talk to her. It's been, I'd say, at least 15 years people have been using the side holes. I don't know why they don't really recommend it. I found that it's a lot of more ventilation.
Mm-hmm.
The box doesn't get quite as hot. As I told you on the previous shows, I put a thermometer in there one time when the babies were in. It was like 90 degrees. Well, of course, you know, they can't survive that when they're full grown. So it helps in a lot of different ways. Escape hole, ventilation. It just really works well. And I want to thank the people who go to the Packer Forum last week. I understand a lot of people came for the Mexican sunflower seeds.
Good.
And there's still some left over. You know, when you have a bush like that, I mean, it just blooms and blooms and blooms, and you have so many seeds, you don't know what to do with them. Well, I can't throw them away. I mean, I know people are looking for them. So I had a whole, like, a box full. So Anyway, but if anybody has any questions about the bluebird boxes or that kind of thing, they could gladly call me. And I've been doing it for probably 25 years now, so I do have a little bit of experience.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, I have a pair as well. I haven't seen any tree swallows come by yet. Are they late?
No, they're here.
Because I have the box up, and it's not, I'd say it's about 15 feet from the bluebird house. But I haven't seen any, so I don't know.
Yeah, they've been here for a while.
I've seen a turtle dove for the first time this morning, but I've been doing other things and I haven't really been paying too much attention. I got to get on the ball here, so.
Well, I'm glad you helped us this morning.
All right, yeah. Well, you have a good weekend, and everybody else as well.
You too. Thank you, Nancy. Bye-bye. This is The Backyard, and we have time. Yes, we do. We have time to say good morning to Lisa in Wyomissing. Lisa, good morning. What's up?
Hi. I wanted to share with you and your listeners some educational opportunities that they might not be aware of relevant to the climate change and nature.
Okay.
I think the Great Decisions courses are really good. And about half of them are relevant to the climate. I've been taking the classes, and some of them are about, you know, international relations with NATO, et cetera, and others. I would say about half of the classes are relevant to the climate and the technology relevant to that. And I just think that they're really educational and a good opportunity to be informed about what is actually happening in our natural world so that we can, you know, be as supportive as we can.
Where are they available?
They are available through the World Affairs Council. And they are at different places. One of them is at one's at Reading Library. One of them is at the Reading Library, and then one of them is at the JCC. And I can give you the phone number.
So this is an in-person type thing?
Yes, it's a class.
Okay.
And, they have different speakers who are on the board of the Great Decisions, and they select different topics that are usually, you know, very interesting and relevant. And I would say about half of them are relevant to the climate and technology related to that.
Okay.
And the phone number is 1-800-628-5754, extension 333.
Okay, that's too fast. 1-800-628
5754.
5754. Okay.
Extension 333.
Okay. Very good. Thank you for that information.
And it's also, they've been talking about, you know, our relationship with China, which, you know, is relevant. And what I've understood is that they are so heavily dependent on computers that they, you know, then when the virus happened, it seems like we all became more dependent on computers. So it's just kind of interesting to think about things and how, you know, how we can try to help create peace in our world. And the other group is called the Council of Churches for Middle Eastern Peace, and they are a group centered in Washington, D.C., who is trying to create peace in the Middle East, which, you know, is, I think of the environment, especially in Israel-Palestine, where you have Gaza just being, you know, destroyed.
Yes.
And if you can focus on nature as a unifying element where we're trying to just live together peacefully in the Holy Land, it's a lot better than, you know, singling out at one national group or another. And I can give you the phone number for that group if you would be interested.
All right.
Okay. The address is, well, I guess the phone number would be better. It's 202-543-1222.
Okay. Okay.
And then, okay, and then thank you for sharing all this information, because it really is relevant and very educational, and it helps us to be able to be effective in protecting our natural environment, I think. And besides the fact that I like doves. And then the last point is that the my church, Atonement Lutheran Church, a man named Bob Eisenbrown is sponsoring a cleanup at Blue Marsh. If your previous caller was interested in helping to regulate the environment there relative to the green algae.
That is not current, is it?
That's happening, I think it's May 22nd.
Okay, okay.
He's having a cleanup for the Blue Marsh area, and okay. I don't know if you'd like that or not.
Very good. Well, thank you for sharing, Lisa. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you for listening and for helping us to, you know, be mindful of our birds and our environment. Thank you.
You take care. Bye-bye. This is The Backyard. Right now, we welcome back. Welcome back from his eclipse watching. Let's say good morning to Master Naturalist Mike Slater. Mike, good morning. How are you?
I'm fine, Jack. How are you doing?
Well, doing pretty well. I hope you had a successful trip.
Yep. The clouds cleared in time, and we had nice sunny weather for most of the eclipse.
And so everybody was happy.
Yep, and I've heard from friends that saw the eclipse down in Austin, Texas, in Ohio, up in Erie, Pennsylvania. So a whole long the track, people got to see it more than the weather forecast indicated, the total eclipse, I mean, which is quite a bit different than just the partial eclipse, which I've seen before and which was what was here in southeastern PA.
Mm-hmm. But you were actually in one of the ideal spots, is that correct?
Yeah. We had 4 minutes and, I think, 20 seconds of total eclipse.
Oh, that's great. So you were among the 40,000-plus people in the Dallas area.
Actually, Dallas was predicting, or Texas was predicting 400,000 visitors for the state.
So it was successful, and you're waiting for the next one now.
Yeah. I don't think I'm going to travel to Iceland or Spain or Australia chasing them like some people do for the next couple years. If I'm still around in 2045, I'll look for it.
Okay. I'm surprised the number of people that actually, they have chartered planes?
Oh, yeah. People go on planes, cruises, all kinds of things to see everyone. Because a lot of them, since the Earth is mostly water, the majority of the surface is water, most eclipses are mostly over water.
Yeah. So other than that, what kind of week did you have?
Well, I got home eventually. A little bit of plane delays and stuff, but the rainy weather that was on the Gulf Coast has followed me here. So we're going to... I did look at Birdcast to see what migration is going on, and this kind of northern winds and rainy weather really dampens it for this part of the world. But I think by Sunday or Monday, we should turn around to south winds and get more birds migrating again. People are reporting a lot of brown thrashers around.
Yes.
I was interested that the bluebird lady was saying that she hadn't had tree swallows in her boxes yet, because they're definitely back in numbers. I saw a lot at Middle Creek 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, they're here in good numbers. A lot of reports.
Around. I wonder if they don't go to some of the upland boxes till later, if they're not thinking of nesting yet or something. And this morning we had a bluebird sitting on top of our bluebird house in the front yard. So I think they're definitely interested in that. I don't know if they've started nest construction. It didn't have anything in its bill.
Well, I had gnatcatchers and Louisiana water thrush reported this week.
Oh, good. They're the early ones. They always make that buzzy sound of the gnatcatcher always makes me think spring, and that they always get here well before the leaves are on the trees. Although I see the cherry trees, the wild cherry trees in our backyard, their leaves are expanding fast right now.
Is that tree blossom for you?
Oh, yeah, lots of flowers. It's the wild black cherry, Prunus serotina. That's so common around here, the one that gets the tent caterpillar nests in it. In fact, I saw a tent caterpillar nest starting in one of ours, just a little bit of the webbing in the crotch. I should tell people, don't worry about those. They won't hurt the tree, and they're good food for cuckoos and orioles, the caterpillars
yes,
are.
Yes, very good, very good. Yeah, it's the fall webworms are the ones that are more damaging.
They still don't usually won't really damage a tree or cause it to die or anything. They just look a little more unsightly. Because
yeah.
The tent caterpillar's webs don't include the leaves. They just go out the twigs and branches. where the fall webworm covers the leaves and makes it a big ugly bundle till it hangs on there all winter.
Yeah, yeah.
But both of them I don't think hurt the trees, and both of them are food for birds.
Well, that's good. Have a question for you from a listener this week who wrote, is garden mulch good or bad for birds?
I don't know. I've never heard.
I wouldn't think it's bad. I don't know what.
Not harmful. It would make it harder for birds that like to scratch and turn over leaves to find insects and so forth. And it can be bad for the garden or a tree if you put too much of it on or pile it up against the trunk. It can hurt the tree and cause the tree to die.
Yes, some people really, I'm surprised at how much I see on or in gardens and around trees.
Yeah, around trees you should be careful not to put, I think they say more than an inch and a half or so, because it can stop oxygen from getting to the soil, which is important for the roots of the trees. And if it's up against the trunk above the root collar where the roots separate from the trunk, there's different kind of bark. The root bark is different and more resistant to fungus. And if you pile the mulch up higher against the upper bark, the funguses and diseases can get in and kill the tree.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to pile the mulch up against the tree trunk.
Well,
but as far as birds, I've never heard anything except,
yeah.
I don't know if birds have an aesthetic opinion about it. Like, well, that looks good or bad. I don't know.
So I noticed Birdcast had only, I think, around 5,000 birds last night or something.
Yeah, it's this kind of wind direction and everything is just not good for birds moving here. So our birds are waiting. Right now, the south winds are making all the birds move that want to go north from Texas to Minnesota, almost in a straight line.
Yeah.
In a few days, the winds will be coming from the southwest to here, and that will make it easier for the birds to start flying here that want to come. I did see a broadwing hawk while I was down in Texas, and I've seen reports of several at some of the spring hawk watches in Pennsylvania already, so they're on their way back.
That's good. I had a report this week from a listener who knew someone that was at Derby Hill up in New York State. They had over, I believe it was over 2,000 black vultures going north.
Wow.
That was incredible. I've never heard of anything like that before.
That far north, too. I mean, I didn't know they... I wonder how far north...
Maybe it was just vultures total. Maybe it was just vultures total.
Maybe.
I'm trying to remember.
We'll have to ask Dave Barber the next time you talk to him.
Okay, will do. Will do.
Hawk Mountain pays attention to which vultures are where.
Well, great talking with you again. Glad you're back and glad you had a good eclipse, Mike.
Yep, a happy spring.
Indeed. Take good care.
Bye, Jack.
Bye-bye. Master Naturalist Mike Slater right here in the backyard on this Saturday morning, and it's good to have your company as well. 610-374-8800, out of the area, toll-free 888-401-0459. And my goodness, Stephanie has been waiting a very long time, and I appreciate her patience. Stephanie, how are you?
Well, that's a good that's a good thing that I had the time. I was organizing my thoughts.
Okay, very good.
Oh, I always get excited this time of year because there is a wonderful bird that we don't see very much here that comes through from now through the beginning of May, and it's the rose-breasted grosbeak.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you, there's nothing I find more exciting than seeing a black and white male rose-breasted grosbeak with that beautiful red, I think it's heart-shaped mark on its chest. And I just love, and the only thing better than that is to have three or four of them at the same time.
I would agree.
Which I have been very fortunate to have experienced that for a couple of years in a row, and I just wanted to share with everybody what I feed and what feeders I use, and so that maybe everybody else can be successful too. First of all, the black and white males seem to arrive first together,
mm-hmm.
and the females seem to arrive just a day or two before the males disappear. I guess they leave and continue further north.
Okay.
Now, that's just my observation. I may be wrong, or I may be reading too much into it, but that seems to be what happened. So they're a larger bird, almost the size of a robin, and so they don't fit on the typical little goldfinch feeders or
any of the
smaller feeders. And they really like safflower, and that's nice because the squirrels don't like it. So if you can put safflower seeds in a hopper or on a flat tray with an edge for them to perch on while they pick at the seeds, that is really easier for them because of their size. They also have a bigger beak. They have the gross beak.
Yes.
Beak. So that's another way to tell them apart from the other birds. As I'm talking about the females. The females are brown and white striped and look like an overly large, to me, an overly large female house finch with an unusually fat beak. So that might help somebody determine what they're watching. But so they like safflower seeds. They also really love suet, but it needs to be on a feeder. Well, I'll tell you what I use. I get the round cylinders of suet from Wild Birds Unlimited, and it stands vertical, and there is a seed tray or catching tray around it that these bigger birds can perch on, and they can sit there, and they just sit there and gorge themselves on the suet. So the males seem to stay for, I would say, 3 or 4 days, could be longer or shorter, and then just before they leave, it seems like the brown and white females come in, like I said.
Mm-hmm.
And then the males disappear, and then the females stay 3 or 4 days also and feed the same way on the same stuff, and then they disappear. So I'm hoping everybody welcomes our grosbeak friends with these special treats and get a chance to watch these beautiful, beautiful birds.
They also like sunflower seeds.
Oh, yes, they do. They do. I don't use sunflower because of the squirrels. That's why I mentioned. Yeah. And just one other little side note in bird news. I don't know what zoo it was, but they just announced on the news last night that a flamingo had died at a zoo somewhere who had lived to be 75 years old.
Wow. Wow.
I mean, I can't imagine. I had no idea they lived that long, but I know the bigger birds do live longer. So isn't that amazing?
Yeah, I think the albatross is also a bird that lives for a long time. But the flamingo, that's news to me.
It shocked me too, but they would know at a zoo for sure.
Sure, absolutely. And of course, it's captive, and they take good care of it, and so the longevity probably is well beyond that of the wild flamingo.
Yes, yes. So, well, everybody have a bluebird day, as Nancy says, and you say. So, God bless.
Take good care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. This is Jack's Backyard. And let's go back to the phones, and let's say good morning to Dave in Moton. Dave, how are you today? What's up?
I've been better myself.
Uh-oh. I don't like that.
I've been sick all week. This is the first day that I can actually talk without coughing. So. Oh,
we wish you well, young man.
Oh, man, I'm telling you. Anyway, I wanted to tell you, I was down in Florida like 2 weeks ago, and you had mentioned a program from the university you put on the phone, you know, that identifies birds.
All right.
And I got to tell you, Jack, I enjoyed that so much when I was in Florida, and I just wanted to thank you for mentioning that. And I go out and sit on my son's patio. He lives in Eustis, right on one of the lakes there. And the guys are drifting by fishing in the morning, and I'm talking to them while I'm drinking my coffee and listening to the broadcast. I just had a great time.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it was really nice.
So you had the Merlin app, right? yeah, on your phone. Okay.
I got to tell you, man, that thing, that's incredible. I sit there and I turn that on and it's listening to me and it's just lighting up because, I mean, there's just all kinds of birds chirping and carrying on. It was just fun just to see all the different birds. Oh, my word.
Oh, that's great.
So, anyway, the other thing I would tell you was, you know, you're talking about bluebirds. I had a bluebird box out here for like over 30 years on my light pole.
Mm-hmm.
And the light pole actually fell over the other week. So, the other month. And it's kind of been out of activity. So I went and bought a new post and I got a new bird box over at Wild Birds and I put it up. And it wasn't on that post, I don't think, more than maybe 24 hours and they were already back on it.
Oh, great.
I told the wife, I said, you know, we have so many around here because we've had it up and had so many broods come out of there that they just hang around. And I said, I wanted to get another one back up. And, man, I'll tell you what, they came right back to it. It was amazing.
They love the area. They love your home. They love your work. And that's they're paying you a big thank you, Dave.
Yeah, so that was worth every penny to put that back. I mean, we just enjoy watching them. They're just so cool. So,
oh, that's great.
Well, anyway, that's all. I just wanted to thank you for mentioning that app. Now, I'll tell you what, that Merlin app is just really great.
Well, I'm glad you called about it. Thanks so much. Now, you take care of yourself.
Like I said, this is the first day I can actually talk without coughing. So,
well, we hope. We hope.
Take care.
We hope spring is kind to you, my young man. Take care. This is The Backyard, and I'm glad you're along today and always glad to say good morning to Susan. How are you today, young lady?
I'm well, Jack. Thank you.
Good, good.
I'm calling because I think children need to be educated about nature, and I had a most wonderful experience the other day. I went to a school to go on a bird walk with the Bird Brain Club.
That's great.
They were third and fourth graders, and the Bird Brain Club meets at this school at Millmont every week, Tuesday and Wednesday after school. And they walk around the school, and it was just amazing what these young people knew. They not only did they identify the birds, but they knew the natural history, the behaviors. It was incredible. It was just so incredible. At the end, we saw a bald eagle.
Oh, wow. That had to make their day. And yours.
Yes. Yeah, it was just so rewarding knowing that someone's out there trying to teach the kids about the birds. So I hope we all try when we have kids in our company.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. The younger you are when you learn birds, it'll last you for a lifetime. And
exactly. So when did you learn about birds?
Well, if you want to argue with my late mother, she said she tried to teach me birds when we were young, but I was too busy playing basketball or hockey or something like that, so I didn't pay too much attention to them. So actually, my career began in the 30s, when I was in my 30s.
Well,
so better late than never.
She'd be proud of you.
Well, today maybe, but not then she wasn't.
Oh, gosh. Well, I just had to share that experience. The other thing I would mention, has anybody mentioned Bradford pears?
They have not.
Well, it's hard to get the concept of invasive species across to people when it's all just sort of looking the same. So when people drive around, like over near the Broadcasting Square Mall and along any of the highways or out in the country where you see all these white trees that are shaped like teardrops, like an elliptical shape, they're the Bradford pears or Callery pears that have escaped and are everywhere. It's easy to see how much of a problem they can be now that they're blooming. So, good news, bad news.
Don't a lot of towns plant those trees for beauty?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Several years ago, they were used in landscaping constantly, and I'm not sure I mean, sometimes there's, as you know, there's action taken against an invasive species, but I really don't know where that stands at the moment. But it's horrible. You can see a whole field of white. A few of the natives are blooming, like the cherries mm-hmm. and the service berry are blooming now, but most of the trees you see, if they're that elliptical shape there, they're the calorie pear.
How are the wildflowers doing in your backyard?
How are the birds, you said?
Wildflowers.
Wildflowers. Oh, wildflowers. They're exploding. They're exploding, Jack.
So
the Dutchman's breeches, Mertensia, Trillium are up. Phlox is blooming. It's just gorgeous. It's just gorgeous.
So are we in prime time for the spring wildflowers?
I would say yes, in the next 2 weeks. You're a little further south, so you're down, you know, there might be plants that are ahead of this, and it has to do with exposure, too. But
sure.
Yes, now is prime time. Walk in the woods and look down occasionally.
Yeah, if in the birds you look up, wildflowers you look down.
Right, right. There's always something to look at.
That's right, that's right. Thank you, Sue.
Thank you, Jack. Have a good week.
You too. Take good care. Bye-bye. This is The Backyard at 610-374-8800. Out of the area, toll-free, 888-401-0459. And I would love to chat with you today. Now, Audubon had an interesting article this week about the northern mockingbird, one of North America's most beloved mimics. The skilled singer has also become inextricable from American popular culture, providing inspiration for the fictional Mockingbird Gay of the Hunger Games franchise to being a central theme in the iconic novel To Kill a Mockingbird. But John James Audubon was a fan of the mocker as well, but here's some facts perhaps that you hadn't heard. And there are so many, and I wanted to get, I mean, there are 10 that I have, and I'll start with the list, okay? There are a total of 16 avian species in the world with the name mockingbird, but the northern mockingbird is the only one native to the United States. Other nearby species include the elusive blue mockingbird of Mexico and the island-dwelling Bahama mockingbird, both of which can occasionally appear in the U.S. And the northern mockingbird is a year-round resident across much of the United States, but an expansion into the Northeast has been successful due, in part, to the multiflora rose, or rambler rose, as they say, which is an invasive species. It's native to Asia. It was introduced to the United States in the late 1700s as a rootstock for ornamental roses. And by the way, the multiflora rose is being picked out, I guess, now or destroyed because of its invasive nature. If you want to attract the mockingbird, native plants, try the native plant database. Just Google that and you will see. So we'll continue with the rest of the mockingbird story when we do have time, but your phone calls always take preference on this program, and that's why we say good morning to Judy in Penn Township. Judy, how are you?
I'm fine. I'm glad you're doing fine, too.
We keep trying, Judy.
That's about it. I just wanted to call and let you know that my brown thrashers are back.
Very good. Very good. I had a lot of reports of brown thrashers this week.
Yeah. Actually, I guess it was last week, right after your show, I saw them at the feeder.
Well, that's good. That's great. And do you just see him in the backyard? Does he come to the food at all?
Oh, no. He comes to the feeder on the deck.
Okay. Very good.
And actually, after he left the feeder, he went back to the same bush that he had a nest in last year.
Aha. Uh-huh. So you suspect maybe the same bird?
That's what I'm thinking.
Oh, that would be nice. That would be nice. And you had them all summer?
Yes.
Oh, that's good. That is very good. Yeah, that's got to be the same bird or a relative thereof.
Mm-hmm. And my bluebirds are busy, and my chickadees are busy, and the titmouse.
So you've got good company.
Oh, lots. I just wish I could get rid of those darn house sparrows.
Well, yeah, they're unfortunately here to stay and in great numbers.
Great numbers.
I underline that in my backyard as well.
Well, we tried all kinds of things to get rid of them, and nothing worked.
No, they're very prolific.
Such is life.
Well, I'm glad you called, Judy. Thanks for the report.
Okay, you have a good one, Jack.
You too. Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye. This is The Backyard. Let's go back to the phones, and let's say good morning to Joan Jones in Burn Township. How are you, young lady?
I'm fine, thank you. How about yourself?
Well, last time I checked, everything was working, and I hope it stays that way.
Okay, that's great. I just wanted to mention, I agree with Sue on the Bradford pear trees. That tree is so invasive. If you find one growing on your property, or if you planted one, if at all possible, please cut it down and get rid of it. It becomes so dense in fields that I don't even think a deer can get through. I know out on Green Valley Road at one of the Wilson complexes, they had to bulldoze it out. And I know they also did at Blue Marsh, but it's growing all along the highways. It is so invasive. And the birds do like the fruit, but it's not a native tree. And, of course, then they deposit the seeds, tree grows in your yard or along the road, and it's wiping out all our native plants, and it's just really, really sad. It's a beautiful tree, and you are correct. A lot of towns and boroughs planted them along the street, but give yourself a good snowstorm or windstorm, the trees are uprooted. It's just not a very desirable tree at all.
In other words, if you plant one Bradford pear, then it just automatically reproduces? I mean, you're going to have more?
What it reproduces is it's from the birds eating the fruit.
Okay.
And then, of course, you know, they deposit the seed somewhere else, and the tree is just terrible. I mean, especially like Sue said, if you look over near Broadcasting Square, there's an open field, and even along 222, it's thick with them.
So don't. Go ahead.
You started to talk about the mockingbird, and I heard on the news the other evening that up in Lehigh County, one of the police departments thought they had a malfunction in their equipment because the siren kept going off, but they went out and it was not their equipment. It was a mockingbird, and it had the police siren noise down pat. Sounded just like the police chasing a car or chasing somebody. It was perfect.
Yeah, I've heard that. I mean, they not only mimic other bird calls or songs, but they imitate almost any sound as well, as Joan just mentioned.
Right, any equipment or bells or whistles. But it was funny because, you know, the police department had no idea it was a mockingbird, but they attributed it to the birds learning the song of the police siren.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Thank you, Joan.
All righty, I'll let you go.
Take good care.
Thank you. You also.
Thank you. Bye-bye. This is The Backyard. Yeah, it was on Channel 69 News about that police department and the imitation of the siren by the mockingbird. I forget, at one time, someone, one of the universities that study ornithology mentioned the number of times different calls it made. It was over, well over 100. I forget how many. Anyway, That's neither here nor there. Back to the phones. Let's go down to Delaware County and say good morning to our friend Audrey. Audrey, how are you today?
Oh, I'm fine, Jack. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
I wanted to bring up, I finally saw my first Phoebe here. The elusive Phoebe I hear everybody talk about.
Yes.
And Eastern Phoebe. And so my husband and I were out back on the deck looking in the woods, and sunlight was coming back from behind the trees. And lo and behold, we see, this was last week, all these little bugs come out. So I guess moths were coming out of wherever or something. They coming out of the tree. And I was like, oh, that looks cool. And I tried to get a picture of it. I mean, it was like about, you know, 30 or 40 of them. And so I guess they hatched. I don't know. And then the next night, I mean, they weren't there, but I guess they must have been in the area. And we're getting all the little buds on the tree, but you can still see the birds quite well.
Good.
And my husband hears, he's like, that's a new bird. So I'm great at the sight and the visual, and he's great at the auditory. And so he's like, that's a new bird, and he's trying to figure out what it is and everything. And then he's like trying to see the size, and it's pretty far off. So I get my camera out, and I get a picture, and he goes, and then between that, the picture and what he heard, you know, in the app.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the app? I'm sorry. That's
The Merlin app.
Merlin app. Oh, he loves that Merlin app. He calls birds in with that Merlin app. So. That he wants to see, and I got enough of a picture, and there it was. It was the Eastern Phoebe, and we were
great.
Just very excited because it's number 46 for us here, for me, and it was such a cute little bird. It was just hopping from tree to tree and just singing and so happy, and I love the way they fly. It was very fun.
They could be nesting near you too, Audrey.
But they don't come to the deck.
No, they're not seed eaters. You won't find them, but they are insect eaters basically.
Right.
And so they would, but they still could nest in the area if you see them often.
Well, just once was nice, but I'd love to see it more. Just like the bluebird, we only saw it like two times and off it went. But that was great because I always heard about people and bluebirds. Still waiting for the eagle, but we'll have to go to Tinicum for that. But robins are not seed eaters, but I have a resident robin who comes up 2-3 times a day on a deck rail, and he's eating seeds.
Yeah, they'll eat some of the small seeds.
He's here every day.
Yeah.
Yeah, every day. And we've had robins. We've been here for over 10 years and never had a robin on the deck coming up every day eating the seeds. The morning dove comes over, sort of pushes him over. He just moves over a little. He doesn't take any stuff. It's a male. And the other thing I wanted to, the lady with the rose-breasted grosbeak.
Yes.
We did have, even though we're a migration going through area, one year I did tell you that we had, they nested in the area, and we had little twins that I got pictures of on the deck rail. Hey, come over. You know, Mom and Dad apparently told them to come over. And, so I have, like, had this video. I'm going back and forth between the one. We were just blown away. It was, like, such a treat. But I did want to bring up something, and do you know about the Lone Star Tick?
Yes, I mentioned that, some time ago. That's one of the new discoveries as far as ticks are concerned?
A very dangerous one.
Yes, yes.
One of my husband's coworker's son was bit by it, and apparently it had burrowed in. And he's in at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia in a medically induced coma because it was causing seizures.
Oh, my.
He's fighting for his life. They're very, very, and I looked up on the National Institute of Health, they're quite dangerous ticks.
Yes, they are.
Yeah,
yes,
they cross the blood-brain barrier and the infection in his brain. So, yeah, they're very dangerous ticks. I don't like ticks to begin with, but this one was really something.
Yeah, you just got to be so careful. you know, wear long pants, wear long sleeves, that whole thing. It's worth it, believe me, as Audrey just mentioned, in case this particular tick. And I'm not sure how prevalent they are in our neck of the woods, but apparently in your Delaware County, they're still around, right?
In Delaware, they have a lot. They're newer, and I guess in the last year or so on the East Coast. But they're coming all the way up the East Coast, and they're really a really bad tick.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned it. Thank you.
So, but other than that, I mean, our little buds are all popping out in the trees, and my husband saw a chipping star this morning, so he thinks it was a baby because it. And
a little bit too young for a baby. The time of year, yeah. They don't have young yet, but they're coming.
Okay, well, this one just sat on the deck rail and just didn't move. Maybe it was just tired.
That's because they're migrating now into the area, so.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right, well, it came to get food and just sat and hung around. That's cool.
Indeed it is.
Okay, you and everybody have a great day. Enjoy your weekend.
Always a pleasure, Audrey. Thank you for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. The Backyard, right here on WEEU, the voice of Berks and beyond. Kathy is up next on the program. She's in Blandon. Kathy, how are you today?
I'm okay, Jack, and yourself?
Not too bad, thank you.
Good. I had a question. I remember that you said that, I think you said we didn't have black cap chickadees here, that we had western chickadees, but in my bird book it says black cap chickadees cover most of Pennsylvania, and then the Carolina chickadees are in the south. So I was a little confused about what kind of chickadees we have here.
Well, if you're in Berks County, and not northern Berks, but if you're in Berks County per se, you have the Carolina chickadee now.
Okay.
If you go up to Hawk Mountain and beyond, you have the black cap chickadee.
Okay.
That's just about the line now. They're moving farther north, I would imagine, but that's probably right now with the Carolina chickadee is really prominent in our area.
All right. Okay. I have to study them better to see the difference.
Oh, it's so hard. it's so hard, Kathy, to tell the difference. The reason I can tell the difference is the call or the song.
Oh, okay.
Because they look very much alike,
Okay, well, thank you for clearing that up for me.
Well, you're entirely welcome. I try when I can.
Have a good day.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you.
Stay well. Bye-bye. This is Jack's Backyard. Let's see where we are here. We're right are we Andy now? Andy, you there?
I am here.
There you are. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Jack. So I'm out birding on this windy day.
Of course you are.
finding harriers in new places, so that's cool.
Very good.
Yep. A previous caller mentioned about ticks, and in Pennsylvania, we're lucky enough that East Stroudsburg University has a tick lab. Their website is ticklab.org. And if you pull a tick off yourself or a pet and you want to know what that tick is and if it's carrying a disease, you put it in a little bag and they have a form you can fill out online and you mail it to them. And in about 3 or 4 days, they will tell you everything you would possibly want to know about that tick, including if it is carrying any diseases you need to be worried about.
And what's that site again?
Ticklab.org.
Okay. Is that T-I-C-K?
Yes.
Ticklab.org. Okay.
Yep. And speaking from experience on this one, I mailed them a tick 2 weeks ago on a Saturday. And on a Monday, they gave me the initial, this is what it is, and this is about how long it was on you. And then another 2 days later, they told me everything that it was not carrying, which was good.
Now, the question is, and often a debated question is, how did you remove the tick?
I used the finest tweezers I had and grabbed it as close down to the skin and pulled, and I probably pulled skin off with because it was really painful. Not quite a mark.
Yeah.
They have a guide on the website from Tick Lab. They will tell you everything about every tick in Pennsylvania, how to remove it. I learned that for most with Lyme disease, it really needs to be attached for about 16 hours. And their analysis was so detailed that came back that said it was attached to me for about 7 hours based on the size of the tick.
And they can tell that. That's amazing.
Yeah, I was floored by just how much they came back with. So it's free if you're a Pennsylvania resident. So absolutely, if you grab a tick off yourself and it's attached, make use of that.
So you just go to ticklab.org and they'll give you mailing instructions and everything else.
Yep, small form to fill out, mailing instructions. They tell you just put it in a plastic bag and drop it in an envelope, and in a few days you get all your information back via email.
Thank you, young man.
Sure. I hope everyone stays tick-free, but if you don't, you got a resource in Pennsylvania for it now.
I appreciate that. Now go and find some more Harriers.
And no ticks.
And there. So, okay. Take care, Andy.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Talk to you later, Jack.
Bye. This is The Backyard. And don't forget to check our podcasts. They're all up now and running, in addition to the rebroadcast of The Backyard on Sunday mornings from 8 until 10. And be sure to check out our fantastic website. I mean, it really is. You really should see it. It's just amazing. And Trees Media Group has done a great job with that. 830WEEU.com. 830WEEU.com. Well, a busy show today. Thank you for all of the phone calls. You made us go, and we hopefully pass along some interesting facts here and there as we all take time to learn a little bit more about nature on Saturday mornings between Animal Radio and today from the Home and Garden Show in Leesport, which follows the news at the top of the hour from ABC. Thought for the day comes from Igor Stravinsky, American and Russian composer, who said, "It is not art that rains down upon us in the song of a bird, but the simplest modulation correctly executed is already art." I like that. Hope you do too. Well, thank you so much for joining us in The Backyard today. We'll hope you do the same thing next week, right here on WEEU, the voice of Berks and beyond. For producer Linda, yours truly, Jack Holcomb, hoping you will find some time to take a peek at Mother Nature. And you might want to start it with a bluebird day today.